we went out and did this training run, and it was like 10 days before the race, and I had barely been running. And I was like, well, if I can get through 15 miles, then in 2 weeks or a week and a half, I can double that.
Dizwins Radio, episode 606, starts in 3, 2. Welcome back to Diz Runs Radio, where I talk with runners from all corners of the running world about running, life, and everything in between. I'm your host, Denny Cray, and it's just about time to head out the door for an easy run and a great conversation. So if you're ready, then I'm ready. Let's get started. Hey guys, real quick, before we get started today, just want to let you know, or maybe remind you, because if you've been listening for a while, you've heard this message before, that Diz Runs Radio is supported by DKMS, that they're sponsoring today's episode. And DKMS, if you're not familiar with the company, with the organization, really, quite frankly, if we want to be technical, it's an organization, not a company, but it's an international nonprofit that has been helping people who are dealing with blood cancer and or various other blood disorders all over the world. And they've been doing it for the last 28 years, which is quite a long time. Obviously, they're not somebody new. They're not fly by night. They've been around, and they've really made a difference for a lot of folks, because they've helped facilitate over 70,000 bone marrow transplants/donations for folks that's what they need to have a chance to win the fight against blood cancer and various blood disorders, blood diseases that they are dealing with. And how does that work? Well, DKMS helps to put together a database of folks who have taken, you know, gotten a little swab kit. They send it to you free in the mail. You rub the little Q-tip on the inside of your cheeks, send it right back, all postage paid. And they put you in the database to see if you might be a genetic match for someone who is in need. To date, DKMS has over 8 million potential donors in the database. And like I said, they've helped to facilitate over 70,000 donations. So if you're interested in joining me in the pool, text the word amazing. That's AMAZING to 50555 for all the details and information. And you can also head over to DKMS.org. And request that free swab kit. They'll get it sent out to you. And if you've gotten one but haven't sent it back yet, do it. It's worth it. It's easy. And it might just be the difference between saving somebody's life. So what have you got to lose? Go ahead and get that taken care of. And if you have any questions about the process at all, again, text the word amazing, AMAZING, to 50555. And without any further ado, let's go ahead now and dive in to today's episode of the show. Hey guys, my guest today is one of those runners that is pretty much all in on all things related to our sport. Running, crewing, pacing, and putting on races, he pretty much has done it all and continues to do it all and will continue to do it all for the for the very foreseeable future. No telling where we will go today or what we'll talk about, but I know we're going to have some great stories and have a little bit of fun along the way. So without any further ado, it is a pleasure to be able to welcome Mr. Walker Higgins to the show. Thanks for joining us today, Walker. Really appreciate you taking the time.
Thanks for asking me, Denny. I'm excited to talk with you and tell you maybe a little bit about myself and learn a little bit more about what you do.
Well, I appreciate it. And like I said, I'm sure we're going to have a little bit of fun. And guys, if you want to check out kind of some of the stuff that Walker's got going on, and we'll obviously get into it in a bit more detail as we go today. But on the Facebook, you can check out his company that he has for putting together races and ultras and things like that. Just look for at Whoa Racing on the Facebook. That's WHOA Racing. And on Instagram, if you want to follow him there, a little bit more of his personal side of things and maybe not quite so much business, it's at Whoa Runner. And that's WHOA again, WHOA Runner on the Instagrams. And as per usual, we'll have everything linked up in the show notes, just like we always do. Today's link is dizruns.com/606. It'll take you right there. All of the short version of what we talk about, links, all that good stuff from today's conversation. So Walker, without, the way we always get things started is with a very simple question that for some folks it's a pretty simple answer, and for some people it's a little bit more difficult to kind of unpack. And you know, if I'm going to paint with a really broad brush, the ultra runners tend to be the ones that have a little bit more difficulty sometimes. So this one might be a little bit of a struggle for you. I don't know. We'll see what happens. But like I said, easy question to ask, hard question to answer, and that's just to simply throw it out at you and see what you have to say. What is your favorite distance to race and why?
Well, that does get tricky, you know, deciding what is your actual favorite. I would say that overall my favorite distance is 100-mile distance.
Okay.
Although I have not done very many 100-milers, I just think that the way it taxes the body and what you have to fight through is just, you know, kind of incomparable. Now, I guess a 200-mile runner, 200-mile races might disagree, but I've just really enjoyed the different experiences you get through 100-mile distance, you know, and through all different types of terrain. From I've done flat and I've done more mountainous, and I like it all. So, but really overall, the 100-mile distance is kind of where I like to find my limits.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's every time that I have somebody that mentions 100 miles, which isn't every episode, of course, but it happens on somewhat of a regular schedule. It always just blows my mind, the idea of going out and running for whatever it is, 20, 25, 30, 35 hours, whatever it takes, depending on the course and your fitness and all that kind of good stuff, to get through. And it always, you know, there's always kind of the obvious questions of why would you do something like that? And you know, who would want to run that far? You know, for me, 26.2 is pretty much enough, although I have dipped my toe into 50K a little bit. So I guess I am officially an ultra runner. I've done one, and I'm on the books for doing another one in January of 2019. So, you know, I've drunk the Kool-Aid a little bit as well. But was there a time? Well, back up just a second before that. How'd you get into running? Is it something that's always been a part of your life, or you know, where'd you get started down this path that has eventually obviously led to ultra distance, 100 miles, and all that kind of craziness?
You know, I would say it tracks back to when I was a young kid. I never participated in track or cross country, but from about a 3 or 4 year old, I started soccer. Mm. And I played soccer for 14 years. Wow. On top of that, I would play basketball. I did taekwondo. I did football. I pretty much did everything. Almost every day after school, I'd have 3 to 4 hours of sports. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of the kid on the field that I wasn't the most talented, from a skill set, but I just never stopped.
Right.
And I was in games. I would, you know, fifth grader yelling at kids at the end of the game why they're not still running, because I just wanted to go all the time. So I think it, you know, I would say it kind of tracks back to the soccer background, being that midfielder that just ran all over the field. With that kind of eventually, once I got into late high school and then into early college, I would do little short runs, and this was past my soccer days, but I could just go out and do 4 miles at a 7:30 pace, and having not run in 6 months, and I really didn't feel too bad. So I just kind of had that background that lend itself to that. And in those early college days, I was in the mindset of that I wanted to gain weight and get bigger and be stronger. And I was experiencing wrist problems, and I tore my shoulder. And so at that same time, I had been personal training a couple of years, and I tried to kind of assess what my body was built for. And so then I just kind of started running more and heading in that direction. And, you know, I guess it, like anyone that starts off you run your first 5K, and then you might do a few of those, and then you decide to push that distance a little bit, and then it's just kind of a long story that it evolved into ultra running eventually. Mm-hmm. With my first 50K being in 2009, then from there, it just a few years, but it eventually evolved into more and more and more.
Yeah, and I feel like that's no matter what our kind of distances are of choice and what our quote unquote limits might be, I feel like that's a pretty common thread where you start somewhere and then you start to, well, I wonder if I could do, I wonder if I could do a 5K or a 10K or a marathon or an ultra or whatever. And it just, you just kind of keep pushing it and pushing it and pushing it. And pretty soon, yeah, you're doing way more than you ever thought possible. Trying to maybe kind of going back in time a little bit. But that first time that you heard about ultra running, were you pretty much immediately like, yes, this sounds like something I want to do? Or was it kind of a, man, that's just crazy? Or where did you stand on that scale, if you can remember?
Yeah, I had heard about ultra running a few years before this, but it would have been around 2009, actually. I had been doing adventure racing and 24 to 36 hour expedition racing for a little while. So I was familiar with the ultra endurance sport, mm-hmm. but not say the steady one discipline, just going for a long run. So I had done a marathon at the time and really kind of had a bad experience, and I really did not want to run much after that, but I was still running. So my adventure racing team, at the time that I had been racing with them for a few years, there was going to be a first, say, actual hosted ultra in Louisiana, that was an actual race. Mm. And the adventure racing team, we were about 2 months out, and they were like, well, we should do that together as a team. And I was like, we don't have time to train for that. It's, a little less than 2 months. No way. Okay. So about a month and a half later, my team called me up and said, this weekend, we're going to do a training run. We're doing the 50K. And it was put on by a great guy, Cesar Torres, who has Q50 races in Louisiana, and kind of he does some destination races also abroad. But so we went out and did this training run, and it was like 10 days before the race, and I had barely been running. And I was like, well, if I can get through 15 miles, then in 2 weeks or a week and a half, I can double that, which is not necessarily the greatest approach, but mm-hmm. but anyway, we ended up doing great on our little training run, and 2 weeks later, my team and I ran it, and three guys, this guy Dustin Branton, that was his first ultra, and now he is an ultra race director, and another guy, Dalton Fetters, and we all finished in right about 4 hours and 44 minutes. Wow. Doing a 50K, and it was an amazing experience. I think Dustin and I, we ran in together a couple minutes before Dalton, and we were both just overtaken with emotion, just because it was at that time, it was so foreign, especially in Louisiana to do an ultra. And, even 10 years ago, the internet wasn't as used, and there wasn't as much publicity about ultras as there is these days. So, it was amazing, but that kind of died out, and I didn't do anything for about 3 years with ultras.
So did you kind of go back to the adventure racing after that and just kind of continue to focus there?
Yeah. I went after that, did some more adventure racing for a couple of years, and really, I had a daughter, and kind of, some focus kind of, changed away from my sports obsession, I would say. Eventually all true loves come back around.
Yeah. And for those that aren't quite aware, and I kind of put myself in this category, maybe I think I know more than I do, or maybe I don't give myself as much credit, but what is adventure racing? Is that like the Tough Mudders and things like that? Or is there something, kind of a, what is, what would classify as an adventure race for those that haven't maybe heard that term before?
So, good way to describe an adventure race. That's a good question, because it is a phenomenal sport that is, really untapped and underutilized for so many people that would just go crazy if they tried it. I mean, they would just love it. So, adventure racing, typically, you can have anything from a sprint distance. What sprint can vary from, say, 3 hours to 12 hours. And then you
quite the sprint for three to 12 hours.
Right. Right. So it's when people hear sprint, they get the, it throws off what they, mm-hmm. what they're thinking it's going to mean. But so, say 3 to 12 hours. And then you can have all the way up to 10 day, expedition races. So the sport, originated, I believe, in like 84, with a French guy that started it. And it was basically to bring together, basically to make the toughest endurance sport in the world. And with that, what you do is, you're given in a true adventure race, you're given a map. And then you're also given coordinates. You need to plot those coordinates on that map, and you navigate your way to those coordinates by the means determined by the race with a compass. Those means could be by running, trekking, hiking, could be climbing, could be kayaking, canoeing, pack rafting, mountain biking, swimming. There could be basically anything that the race director decides. That's what you have to do from, say, checkpoint A, B, and C, and yada yada. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, it's really just an amazing sport, that I hope something like this can get some people kind of searching it. I've probably done about 75 to 80 of those.
Wow.
Varying in distance from the 3 hour all the way up to, I competed in the Patagonian expedition race, which is a 10 day race. Unfortunately my team, didn't fare so well, and we were knocked out pretty early, but, I've completed, multiple 3 day expedition races. And typically with those, the 2 or 3 day, you're going to not sleep, or maybe sleep an hour or two.
Mm-hmm.
So, but it's a really neat sport.
As per usual, I go off on one of these little tangents, then I come up with a half a dozen questions. But, at first when you were describing, I was kind of feeling like it was sounding maybe a bit like Barclays, but maybe not, because then I hear you say team component. So would Barclays be kind of an example of that, or not so much?
No, not at all, actually. I should have said this, in adventure racing or expedition racing, typically it's going to be a 4-man team.
Okay.
And normally you're going to have, to be ranked in national points and world points, have one female. And so your team is really, you're as strong as your weakest link. And that could be anybody, you know, anyone on the team. So you really have to put together a team that has like skills, and then also that has differing skills. Like, you're going to have one main navigator, maybe someone that's stronger on the bike, someone that's stronger at hiking. So it's really neat. And, you know, for anyone interested in something like that, there is a great video out there called What is Adventure Racing? And I believe it's made by World Series Adventure Racing Association, but it's really cool, and that video just gets you like super pumped.
Awesome. We'll make sure that that's in the show notes for anybody that's interested. And for, if somebody is interested in listening to this, is there a website, or can they check it out with touch base with you, or where are resources to learn more about adventure racing?
Yeah. So there's actually a lot out there. There's some great organizations nationally that put on adventure racing, and they also put on a lot of say starter races that are made for you to not be too intimidated and kind of get your feet wet with it. So you have, so I'm trying to think of the different, websites off the top of my head.
If not, it sounds like probably just Google would work, eh?
Yeah. Google works great. There's some great ones out there. But you can just search adventure racing. There's some really good ones. Florida Extreme puts on, I think, the most in the nation each year. They put on about 20 a year.
Wow.
And then there's some great organizations up around Pennsylvania and kind of the South. It's a little bit bigger sport in Europe right now. Mm. After the recession, say in 2008 and 2009, that kind of that really took an effect on nationally. But if you have seen, they actually recently announced that Bear Grylls and one of the original adventure racers out there are bringing back a race called the Eco Challenge. And so that's going to be coming, and they're going to have national coverage and stuff. So hopefully that kind of brings some life back into that sport.
Awesome. It definitely sounds like something that would be interesting, even if it sounds like it might be a bit more than what you want to bite off, at least to watch and learn more about it and stuff. So yeah, that'd be cool if it came back a little bit and kind of bubbled up to the surface a little bit and for some runners and whatnot that are out there.
Right. Yeah, definitely so.
So then getting kind of a little bit back to the running side of things, you dabbled your toes in the ultra running. You enjoyed it, ran a very solid race for the first time, especially going into it a bit, maybe undertrained would be putting it nicely. And then, like you said, kind of life happened, went away from it for a bit and ended up coming back. When you got back into the sport that second time, was it pretty much like, this is kind of what I want to focus on now and you know, kind of the rest is history, or was it kind of a rocky start again for you?
It was a slow progression again. Besides doing adventure racing and ultra running, I'm a seasoned stand-up paddler, and I actually, until last year, I owned a stand-up paddle shop. But when I had that, I was traveling and doing, I don't know, 7 to 10 races all over the Gulf Coast and the South. So I would say I'm just an adventurer and just love being outside and testing just my limits on whatever the next sport is, whatever I can try. I would describe myself as hyper competitive, but a good sport. So I believe in being a good sport first, but I love just competition against myself and others. It took a little bit of time before I really kind of dove in head first, and I would say that was kind of 2015. I added some races to my schedule that I actually host, one of those is a 12-hour loop race called Beast for a Day. It's a really, really awesome trail in Louisiana that's a lot more challenging than the people that have come in from out of state thought it was going to be. So I added that, and then I added a 100-miler called Children of the Cain. And so obviously kind of play on words with Children of the Corn, but mm-hmm. you're running through cane fields roughly for 100 miles. So that kind of started getting me more into the scene, just because I was at that point now race directing ultras as well, and doing them occasionally. Over the next few years, kind of upped the ante and added more races to the schedule that I actually put on for others. And at the same time, added more to my workload, and slowly kind of transitioned out of doing some as much stand-up paddling, mm-hmm. And trying to kind of really focus and see what my limits were within the ultra running scene.
Gotcha. And I want to dive into the race directing bit a bit more. It's something that I certainly don't know much about, and always am curious on learning new things. But first, just want to take a quick second and mention today's sponsor again, pay a couple of bills, and remind you that the show, guys, is supported by DKMS, which is an international nonprofit that has been helping people who are battling blood cancers and blood disorders all over the world for a number of years, 20-plus years at this point. So that they're not new to the game, but it might be the first time or recently that you've only just heard of them. And one of the things that they do to help fight the fight against blood cancer and various other blood diseases and blood disorders is they register bone marrow donors and help set those people up, the people who are willing to donate blood marrow or bone marrow, to those that need a transplant, that need a donation to help them fight the fight. And like I said, in those 20 plus years, over 8 million potential donors have been added to the pool of donors. And there's been over 70,000 marrow donations that have taken place as a result of that. So if you haven't done so already, I know we've been talking about this for a few months. If you haven't taken the time to get yourself in the pool, would you be willing to do that? All you need to do is head over to dkms.org, and you can get the kit, the swab kit. They'll send it right to you. You swab the inside of your mouth and with the little Q-tippy type things and send it right back, all postage paid. Or you can head over to the website, obviously, also and learn more about it. And you can also text the word amazing. That's AMAZING to 50555 to get more information and to find out how you can help. Potentially save a life. So thanks once again to DKMS for supporting the show. And thank you guys for supporting the sponsors, because that kind of support keeps them coming, which keeps the show going and growing and getting better. And so it's all one big, circle of scratching each other's back, and everybody wins when we do that. So thank you for the continued support of DKMS. So Walker, kind of getting back, like I said, I would love to find out more about kind of some of the race directing things that you're doing and the options that are out there. What got you started with directing races? Because I feel like as a runner, I think I know that directing a race is a lot of work. There's a lot of things that are going on with it, moving parts, things behind the scene that hopefully we as runners never realize, because if everything's flowing smoothly, it just looks like a great race and we're out there running, whether it's 5K or 100 miler or whatever it is in the middle. And I know that as a race director, you've got to have about a million other things going on that are pulling your attention and trying to take care of this and put out this fire and make sure everything goes smoothly. What made you want to get started doing that?
Well, let me interrupt that question 1 second, because I was just gonna reiterate that the DKMS. So my wife and I are on their list, and just if anyone heard that and was considering it, it was super easy. We actually did it at a concert, and it was very easy. And now occasionally I get emails from them, but it's not intrusive or anything. But I just thought, oh wow, I'm actually the sponsor that he has is something I'm involved in. So I thought it was good to reiterate what you said there. So if anyone's considering it, it's a great program that could potentially save lives.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for doing that.
Yeah. So what got me in race directing? So I had been racing pretty steadily for probably 5-6 years, and I'm a creative being, and I like to create and be able to have autonomy in what I do, and so I had been dreaming up different race ideas for years, but never followed through with it. And I pulled into my driveway one day, and I thought, I got it. Okay. So to give you some background, my family has been in Louisiana for hundreds of years raising sugarcane. And I had been trying to think of a creative race that no one had done. And then all of a sudden I went, wait, I can run people through our cane fields. Mm. And this is like, wait, it was right here in front of me that whole time. So I started a race in 2010 called Cane Field Classic. And it's grown into this really kind of crazy cult following of about 500 people annually that come to run through cane fields. And we have a Cajun band at the end. We have fresh cut sugar cane. Just really, it feels like you're almost at a family reunion, because it's a larger race than would normally have that feel, mm-hmm. but it feels like you know everybody. Mm-hmm. About 4 years ago or 5 years ago, I started, I added a couple of distances to that race. And so now that race is known as having the world's most dangerous race medal, in that all 500 runners get a custom etched real 16 to 20 inch machete.
Oh, Lord.
So it sounds kind of gimmicky and kind of crazy, but you're running through cane fields. The tradition is you cut cane with machetes. The runners collect them afterwards, and everyone just kind of goes crazy over these custom etched machetes. I've had people fly in from Alaska, Wisconsin, New York. I mean, really all over the nation to come get a machete, which is kind of crazy, but it's a fun race, and that's kind of what started race directing. And I'll tell you, the first race, I probably ran around like a chicken with my head cut off. It was definitely a stressful experience, but my business has grown, my experience has grown, and so since then I just try to perfect the craft as much as possible, and not delay in ordering things that you need for a race. I've learned that is not a good idea. and just like anything else, it's any job, any thing you're doing, you have to have an order and a system about it. And so when you do and you follow that, you're going to have good results. And when you don't, your race is going to be a little chaotic and you're going to have issues. But I assure you, every race that's ever been run, there's an issue behind the scenes. Most of the runners don't know even happened. The race I described, the Canefield Classic, is annually. That's my largest race that I host. But I typically, my trail races range from about 75 to 100 people. And then I have some paddle races that maybe have 150 to 200, and some ultras that are more in the 150 range. So they're all different and unique. With some transitions in life and business I was having a couple of years ago, I started adding more races as an actual business, and it's been fun and not always easy, but in a lot of work, like you said, there's way more involved in any race than most people know, and 50 different messages between every runner. it's a lot of fun, and it's a way that I can give back to the running community and create these unique events for people to challenge themselves. And if someone would ask me what was, I guess, my main purpose in a race is designing something that is not only fun, but is going to push your limits. Mm-hmm. In any race I do, whether it's a mile or 100 mile, I'm trying to find whatever limit there is there. And so that's what I want to recreate for all of my runners, and getting them to find whatever that limit is. If they find their limit and they DNF, that's fine. You found your limit. Right. Now work on becoming better. So that's a little bit about the race direct.
Yeah. And one thing that I can't just let us gloss past, is that you said that, every race, there's always something that goes on, and hopefully more often than not, it's something that the vast majority of the runners, 99% or something like that, never have any idea. Can you share something good that happened, or something juicy, an instance from one of your races that you just, whether it was something big that was a big fire that required some serious calling an audible and getting things taken care of to solve the problem, or something crazy that was just we never could have expected, or just some good story from a race of something gone awry?
Oh yeah. I mean, I've got so many. I don't even really know where to start. I can tell you one race, the porta potty company did not show up. And they assured me when they didn't show up on Thursday, they were coming on Friday. And then on Friday, they assured me they would come out the morning of at 6 a.m. They still did not come. So I had 450 runners trying to figure out what to do. Luckily, that race was close to some family property because it was a cane field race. And I got to open up three houses to be used as the race porta potties. And two of them had overflow issues. So it was a disaster.
Yes. Wow.
But you know, majority of the time, most runners are going to go with the flow and understand that not everything happens as it was envisioned, and you just have to roll with it. So, you know, and we've had other issues where there's been, you know, more scarier circumstances that were, you know, life or death in ways. But overall, every issue has ended up, you know, working out, and luckily that most people are understanding and forgiving when issues out of our become out of our hands. So,
well, and shoot, I mean, you know, I've seen this before at some local races and stuff where people complain about this, that, or the other, you know, and like your story with the porta potties, it wasn't like you just decided you didn't need porta potties there. So like people can get all pissy about it, but like, it wasn't like you were trying to sabotage something. Like, come on, let's think about this. You're trying your best, and you know, there was a dropped ball somewhere, and you're trying to make the best of a bad situation. So yeah, kind of a little bit of grace goes a long way on race day, training day, whatever the case might be.
Yes. One guy with that porta potty incident went to social media and just blasted my races. And he had his 87-year-old dad out here or out there to watch the race. And he said on social media that I wanted his dad to pee in the woods. And I'm like, that's clearly not what I wanted.
Right.
But, you know, I've learned that you have to sometimes just let people say what they're going to say and not respond, or either respond politely and just kind of I think the saying is eat some crow. Mm-hmm. So, you know, like you said, most people are going to be forgiving on that. So, so luckily, I think I've built a good name in the running world locally, and so I hope to keep it that way.
Yeah, definitely. And you know, you mentioned that you've continued to grow, and you know, you kind of got some systems down now, so things are hopefully running a bit smoother, and you know, becoming more and more of something that you do business wise, things like that. Are you approaching a limit as far as how many races you can handle, or do you have plans to continue to grow, or where, you know, how many races do you have now, and you know, where are we at as far as potentially adding more?
So I have, I'm trying to do the quick math because it sometimes changes. Let's see, I have a trail series, which consists of six races that have a 3, 6, and 12 mile distance. And I added that in 2017. And that's been good. You know, I get about 75 runners average a race to that. And so I hope to keep that for next year and the following years. And then besides that, I have two ultras, which are Canefield Classic. I'm sorry, Children of the Cane and Beast for a Day. And then I have my traditional Canefield Classic race. Mm-hmm. So that's 9. And then I also host a race on the Mississippi River. It's a paddle race that allows all vessels out there. Mm-hmm. And it starts in Baton Rouge, which is the most traffic section of the river in the nation. And it travels 13 miles downriver. And so This year I will put on 10 races, which is definitely a lot. This year alone, I've already traveled myself to 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, I think 7 different states or countries to race myself. Mm-hmm. And then I also go to other races to support, to promote, show my name, or show my face. What you have to do as a business owner to be relevant, and then also to give back. I have a few friends that put on races that I travel to. So the limit is about there. Mm-hmm. I don't think I could have many more races and have much of any semblance of weekends throughout the year, which is rare for me to have a down weekend regardless, but, mm-hmm. And I would probably be divorced as well.
Yes. Yes. Yeah. You start disappearing every weekend, and that can wreak havoc on the family life. No question about that.
Yes. Yes, it can.
So, you mentioned, some of the things that you do and traveling and supporting and running races and doing things. I kind of shifting gears maybe for the last time today as kind of keeping an eye on time, and eventually we're going to have to wrap this thing up. But I know just recently you were out in the desert out in California, Death Valley, doing a little bit of crewing and pacing for Badwater. I've talked to a few folks that have done Badwater before, some folks that have done very well racing at Badwater before. And that just sounds, it sounds crazy. It sounds somewhat miserable. It sounds like it would be something cool to experience, but maybe not run and have to deal with all the treachery that's involved, the heat and all that kind of good stuff. But what was your experience of being out there and being a part of the Badwater 135 this year?
Wow. It was really quite amazing. I had never really wanted to do Badwater until this past year, and I kind of got it in my mind. And like we talked about before, is you kind of get those limits, and then you think, I may want to do that. And so I got it in my mind, and I applied myself, and I did not get in. So that caused a chain reaction for the rest of the year for me, with participating in the other Badwater events and then crewing. And I was fortunate enough to get on a crew of a gentleman named Steve Gordon from England. Great guy, and we had just I had an amazing time personally, and I know he did too, even though he had to run. But the event, if you're in the ultra scene, you've probably heard of it, you've probably seen pictures of friends that have gone and crewed, but until you go, it really doesn't, you can't really grasp what they're doing out there. I've seen some people put it down on social media and say, they're getting squirted with water bottles the whole time, or their crew's doing this, or I assure you, it is definitely one of the toughest environments, the toughest environment I've ever been in. And without running it, but crewing it and running a good bit, I know it would have to be one of the harder races in the world. It is just kind of mind-boggling being out there, not being familiar with desert heat, being familiar with Louisiana, 95 degrees, 95% humidity. We get around 115 heat index, which is pretty crazy. But when I was out there last week, the start of the race at night, it was 121. Oof. And it felt like you were standing in a sauna with a hairdryer blowing in your face.
Oh, man.
It was just ungodly hot. And that was at night. And then it turned into 128 during the day. And the same winds. And, the conditions are just extreme. They take, extra precautions with crews. You have plans to where your crew is probably going to meet you between 1.5 to every 4 miles, depending on what plan you establish. And, you know, what your restocking needs are. But the amount of water consumption is just off the charts. Mm-hmm. and, you know, it really is this this neat gem of a race that's like this family. I've been lucky enough to – I've gone to their two other ultras this year. And I did really well at those myself personally. And then I got to crew. So I've instantly, not really knowing many people in that circle, I've kind of fully involved myself. And now I'm kind of I would hope they would say I'm part of the circle. But, you know, I feel like I am. So I guess that's all that matters. I've made some friends out there. And it's you know, it's not cheap. But if people can find the means to do it and reach those, say, qualifying points you need, so to speak, for their application, then I would say then, you know, if you want to test your limits, it's going to be a good race to do that. And it's just I don't know. It's just unlike anything I've ever experienced. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, my whole goal, the whole reason I went, was the intent of hoping that this, coupled with doing the other races, with doing the rest of the races I have on my calendar for the rest of the year, gets me into Badwater 2019.
Gotcha.
If it happens, you know, I'll be ecstatic. If not, I'll definitely be disappointed, but there's not a clear it's not like, oh, you do this and this, you're definitely in. It's you do this and this, and you've qualified, you've met the minimum. Now, what do you have that differentiates what you've done from others? Because there's just, you know, whatever, 2,500 people apply each year. It's kind of like the Barclay in that way, in that so many people apply and they can only allow so many people in.
Right, right. Do you, and I would have to imagine that this would be the case, but I'm still going to ask just to make sure. Do you think that being out there and being part of the crew this year, you know, assuming or you know, fingers crossed you get in next year, that has to be an asset, right? To have experienced it a little bit more firsthand as opposed to not being out there before and then trying to prepare for it, to train it and actually run it?
Yeah, you know, it's not a written rule, but I'm pretty sure that the race director, Chris Kosman, and the three other people that decide on who gets in, I'm pretty sure they almost require you. It's not written that you're required, but that is one of the questions that they ask in the application. And the question is, have you crewed at Badwater? And right. You have to have a referral letter from your racer because I think they want to know if you're a good person, if you gave back to the sport, if you have experienced the conditions, how you did out there, you know, so they ask numerous questions, in one being, you know, what is the meaning of life? So it's not a clear cut and dry, application, but I definitely know that they want you to have been out there to experience those conditions and to see how you handled them. And that's, I guess, what the letter from your racer would provide.
Yeah. And I suppose it would kind of solve that problem of not knowing what you got into, because, you know, if you've been out there, you know, it's not like some years it's only going to be in the 70s. Like, it's always going to be hot as blazes out there. So you've experienced it. Now you still want to come back and run. All right. Now we'll look at your application a little bit more closely.
Yes. Yes, I think that's exactly it. You know, they want to. I can tell you, for me personally, I can handle heat really well. I've done some really crazy just training runs. I typically run middle of the day, 95 degrees, 90% humidity, and I would go crank out an easy 10 to 12 miles, and it won't feel too bad. But the conditions out there, we're just different. Mm-hmm. And it definitely gave me a different appreciation for the race. Even reading all the things, it's like, you know, I don't know the example, but that, you know, seeing a picture of the Grand Canyon is not going to give it any right. justice. Right. So
Yeah. Yes. Hearing the stories of somebody that's run Badwater is it sounds amazing, but until you're out there, you just like you said, a picture of the Grand Canyon looks great, but until you've actually seen it, it blows it away. And I'm sure that's the comparison you're trying to make, right?
Yes, exactly.
Gotcha. So, wow, I feel like we could keep going for days because there's still several things that I wanted to bring up or thought we could maybe talk about and we haven't gotten to yet. But at some point, we'll have to wrap this thing up. And who knows, maybe down the road we can do a round two. But before we do that, the last kind of thing that I like to try to close with here, Walker, is what I call a philosophical question, which isn't maybe as scary as sometimes it can sound, but something kind of similar to the introductory question. So very open-ended, no right answer, no wrong answer. You can take it for a spin and you know, spend 10 or 15 minutes on it. Or we can wrap it up in just a couple of sentences, you know, kind of however it works best for you to answer this question. And I just to be curious, you know, in the decade or so that you've kind of really been in the running scene and making it a much bigger part of your life than it was, at least when you were more adventure racing as opposed to ultra distance running. What is the focus on ultra distance running, both from a runner and from a race director? What is being part of this scene and this community taught you about yourself that, you know, who knows, maybe you would have never learned this lesson if you hadn't, you know, gone pretty much all in on all things ultra distance running and racing?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, I think personally and from the business side or the race directing side, I think it showed me that mostly that our limits are preconceived walls that are simply not there. Mm-hmm. the limits of the human body is just endless. Seeing people come through races that just look completely trashed at mile 80, and at this point they're 20 miles past their furthest run, not knowing how they're going to keep going, and they head back out on the trail and knock out another 20 miles. I think that you kind of, when you've done a 100-miler or whatever that limit, that big goal that you've done, whoever that you is, when you do that, it shows you that so much in life you can get by. And I think as a whole, society maybe doesn't push their physical limits as much as they used to. And I think this is a way for people to, you feel like sometimes when you remove from a race, like if I got through that, I mean, what can hold me down? What can hold me back? So I think it's just amazing. And, you know, of course we're going to have people that run super fast races or do this, and we're going to have people that are slow, and that's fine. We all have our own ability. And I believe in each person pushing their own limit, not worrying about, you know, a lot of people will hear some runner that did this great race and they'll be like, oh, well, I only do this. Mm-hmm. They'll never say that. You know, go out and try your hardest. If you're trying your hardest, it doesn't matter that someone's going to, I mean, my fastest 100-mile ever, I got beat by 2.5 hours.
Right.
So that guy is just crazy. Ronnie Deltzer, who's like the two-time U.S. champion of the 100-miler. But it just shows you, like, don't discredit your ability based on someone else's. Try as hard as you can. And if you – wherever that limit is, just find it. And so I think – to just sum it up, what you asked is that it just showed me that people's limits are so much greater than they know.
Mm, What a great way to wrap things up. And as per usual, I'll try to just stay out of the way and let that sink in for folks, and we'll wrap things up right there. So once again, guys, if you liked the idea of some of Walker's races and you want to find out more about what's going on the Facebook at Whoa Racing, WHOARACING, you can also check it out on Ultra Sign Up. You know, those of you that have run Ultras before, you know that Ultra Sign Up can be a dangerous place because of all the races. You're like, oh, that one sounds fun and that one sounds fun. But if you're in the Louisiana area or you want to travel to Louisiana and check out some races, look for all things Whoa Racing on Ultra Sign Up and on Facebook. And if you want to follow Walker himself, at Whoa Runner, WHOARUNNER. DizRuns.com/606 is the link to the show notes. We'll have everything linked up as promised right there. So you can point your browser over there and connect with Walker, his races, and anything else we talked about that makes sense. So Walker, thank you for taking the time today. Thanks for what people don't know, you know, kind of one of those race director things. We had a little technical issues today, but we navigated them. We made it happen. And I'm glad we were able to do so. So again, just thanks for the time today, and certainly wish you nothing but the best going forward in 2018 and beyond. All the best to you, my friend.
Yes. Thank you, Denny. I really appreciate it. It's been a pleasure.
All right, guys. Thank you so much for taking the time to listen to today's episode of the show. I hope that you enjoyed the conversation between Walker and myself. And as always, I'd be curious to know what stood out to you from this episode. What was something that we talked about that resonated just a little bit more with you today than everything else that was included in today's conversation? For me, it came close to the end there during the philosophical question when Walker was talking about how, running is just one of those things that shows you how much more you're capable of and being able to push your limits and realize that maybe you can do more than you give yourself credit for. And it just rings true with me. Because I like to think maybe with all of us, because I think at one point or another, if we're honest, we didn't think that doing whatever was possible. That might mean running a mile without stopping. That might mean running a mile in general. That might mean marathon, half, ultra, trail race, whatever. But I just feel like most of us probably at one point early in our running careers, and maybe you're still early in your running career, there's things that we think that maybe we can do and maybe we can't. And, as we progress in the sport, as we try new challenges, it starts to erode a little bit, starts to chip away at that wall that gets put up and saying, I could never do that. You may not want to do something. You may not ever feel the urge to push on to an ultra or a marathon or a 10K or whatever, but I like to think that by going through training and working towards some of these goals, we kind of give ourselves a little taste that we might just be able to do some things that we haven't thought have been possible in the past. So that was the big thing for me. And you know, I've documented it before. I've talked about how never, never, never am I going to do an ultra. And I would be lying. I would be lying if I said that I wasn't wondering how far I could go. You know, I at this moment, as I've said, I don't have a desire to try to run a 100-miler, but I don't think it's impossible. So stay tuned. Who knows? Who knows what the future might hold as far as running some of those longer distances. But if running's taught me one thing, it's taught me that I'm probably more capable than I give myself credit. So who knows? Who knows what the future holds? But that was my takeaway. That was my takeaway. What about you? What stood out to you from this episode? Let me know. Shoot me a tweet at DizRuns. Shoot me an email, DizRuns@gmail.com. And of course, you can head over to the show notes for this episode, DizRuns.com/606. And you can leave your thoughts and takeaways and feedbacks there about this episode as well. And while you're there, there's a link right to DKMS. Once again, DKMS is the sponsor of today's episode. They've been trying to change the world one person at a time, save some lives, fighting blood cancer and blood disorders one person at a time for the last 28 years. So if you want to be part of the fight, text the word amazing, AMAZING, to 50555. And of course, you can head over to DKMS.org for all kinds of information and get a free swap kit as well. So thanks to their support. Thank you guys for supporting the sponsors. It certainly helps keep the lights on, keep the show growing, bigger and better. That's kind of like in running, that's a lot of our goals. That's kind of my goal in the podcast as well. Bigger and better every day, every month, every year. And thank you for all the ways you support that goal, that ambition. And I hope that you see that things are improving as well. So without any further ado, let's go ahead and wrap this thing up, put a little bow on it and call it a day. But thank you for listening. Thanks for supporting DKMS. Thanks for DKMS for supporting the show. Hope that you enjoyed this one. As always, thoughts and feedbacks and takeaways are appreciated. You know where to find me. And until next time, please be well. Take good care. Thank you guys so much for listening. And we'll talk soon. Take care, guys.